Are we ready? You know, I was reading a thing I meant to tell you about Rabbi Cook. There's selected writings, and they give a biography about him.
Ken? This week is the weekly portion of Vayishlach. Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim Lefanav Elisa Vachiv Atza Seir Sedei Adom. The portion of the week begins with a narration of the, I won't use the word reunion, but the meeting again of Yaakov and Esav. For those of you who don't recall that Yaakov literally fled from Esav because Esav considered Yaakov as a perpetrator of thievery, meaning he had stolen the blessing that he believed was rightfully his. And to put the energy and tone into the lecture, we will always begin with the reading of the Zohar itself in the Aramaic, because by injecting the reading of the Zohar, whether we even couldn't even read it or we don't understand the word that the Zohar itself is stating, that is unimportant, because as you know, the power of the Olivet, which contains all of the potential energy that one can ever wish or desire to acquire, is already potentially included within the Hebrew letters and words of the Aramaic language. So I'll begin with the first paragraph, which states, Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim, Rabbi Yehuda Patach. It says in Tehillim, in Psalms, chapter 91, Ki malachav yitzava lach lishmacha bechal derachecha. Haikra ukmua. This verse has already been discussed. Chavrayo, do b'shate de barnash asili alma. At the moment that an individual comes into this world, when he's born, Miyad is the man Bahadye Yetzehara. At the moment of birth, he immediately is infused with a thought energy intelligence of Yetzehara. Now, of course, we understand Yetzehara refers to this thought energy intelligence of desire to receive. In other words, for those of you who have already taken the beginner's lectures, you know that from age zero, the time of birth, until age 12 of a female or age 13 of a male, there is but one energy intelligence, and that is only me. In other words, no child, irrespective of what the outward appearance of his activity or her activity might appear, as one that is generous, one that is sharing, one that is giving, that concept does not exist. The concept, that consciousness by a young child until the ages of 12 or 13 does not exist of sharing or giving. But if you notice at times that a child appears to be a good child and it is a normal child, now, we have to assume that the child is so far advanced that it can literally protect its internal ulterior motive as to why it is sharing and why it is doing a positive activity, etc. Because that consciousness of sharing for the sake of sharing alone, or receiving for the sake of sharing alone, does not literally exist within the frame of a child, female child until 12, male child until 13. That's what the Zohar says. At that moment, that is the consciousness of at birth. The iu mekatreg lebanash tadir, and this will be the mekatreg. This will be that aspect of schizophrenia, the aspect of doubt, the aspect of not knowing what to do, as most of us at one time or another, depending who you are, whether it's often or it's not often, we're not sure. The reason why we are not sure, meanwhile, we're just going to accept the word of the Zohar, is because this Yetzer Hara, this consciousness of negativity, is constantly there to be mekatreg, to trouble us, to confuse us. Kedama katuv lepetach chatat rovetz. At the entrance, sin always lies. My chatat rovetz, da Yetzer Hara. What is sin? Sin is nothing but the aspect of a consciousness of desire to receive for oneself alone. This is the Zohar. Now, what is the... All right, let me go on to the other aspect that the Zohar provides us with. And he says, Ve'matai ati barnash lizdacha, kad'iu bar tleser shanin. When a person, the male at 13 or the female at 12, approaches that age, kiden izdaveg barnash bitarvayu. At that moment, in other words, you've heard this already in the lectures for most of you, that this idea of bar mitzvah and bat mitzvah is a fraud. Either it means a pencil, either it means a fountain pencil, or it means gifts, or it means an affair, right? But what is the essence of bar mitzvah and bat mitzvah? No one knows. Other than the rabbi said, this is the time you are now officially called a man or a woman. The Zohar says that something metaphysically is happening. But what is that aspect? A new consciousness. Chad mi yimina v'chad mi smola. A new consciousness enters the child, the female child at 12, and the male child at 13. That is what bar mitzvah means. That now, within this child, there are two consciousness, positive and negative. Now the child can have an activity or can aspire to receive for the sake of sharing, which before the age of 12 or 13 couldn't have that kind of activity, because it was at that point there was no activity or consciousness of sharing, in spite of the fact that maybe, as I said before, we can see some children that do share. But remember, that sharing either is abnormal, and as you also know from the beginner's lectures, which I don't want to dwell on, that when a child is born, there is a test to see the normalcy of the child, the grasp or moral reflexes. In other words, the doctor will open up the palm of the hand, and if the fingers go back this way, they know the child is normal. But if the fingers remain outstretched, they immediately take this child for observation. The child cannot be normal. Now, the doctor doesn't know why. He only knows that after trial and error, after enough of investigation, they came to this conclusion. Ask him why, he doesn't know. But now you know why. Because a child that does not contain this aspect of me, of a desire to receive for me alone, is an abnormal child. It's an abnormal child. Therefore, at age 13, this aspect of sharing, this consciousness of a desire to receive for the sake of sharing, begins. Yetzer tov li yimina v'yetzer ra li smola. ואילו אינן טרין מלאכין ממש.
And these two aspects, these two consciousness, never leave the individual. At this point, we'll ask what and why did the Zohar bring in these aspects of consciousness, of right and left, to the Parshat HaShavua, to the weekly portion of Yishlach Yaakov Malachim Lefanav El Esav Achim.
As I have said repeatedly, that we can never explore the Chumash, the Bible, from a literal narration aspect and perspective. If it says Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim, that Yaakov sent angels, or he sent messengers, so there is a disagreement of whether it meant he sent messengers, or, as Rashi says, comments on this particular verse, that they were literally malachim, literally angels. Now, Yaakov was a human being. He was a normal human being. What does it mean he was taking angels from heaven? I mean, if this is the way you're going to translate the Pasuk, it doesn't have too much merit. I mean, here is a human being who is taking malachim and sending them to Esav Achiv. How does he control these malachim? Malachim are supposedly on a higher dargah, higher level. Therefore, because the Zohar has connected and associated what we have just discussed insofar as consciousness is concerned, we now learn a new perspective as to what malachim mean. Generally, as children, we are brought up that it means angels. Angels. On Friday night, we sing Boachim L'Shalom, Shalom Aleichem, to the angels. Are there angels? Are there angels? How do they look? How do they behave? Who are they? What are they? And how do I connect with these angels? Or maybe it's only Yaakov. You must be a Yaakov. So again, the Zohar says that if the Torah meant this story for Yaakov and not for me, then he wouldn't write it. Because what does this serve? What purpose does this serve for me? Whether Yaakov sinned Malachim, they were true angels, not true angels. It's a story. And 80%, let's say, of at least Jews don't read the Bible anymore. Do not read the Torah because it doesn't make any sense. Or it has nothing to do with them today. So there was a nice story. It's a storytelling. In fact, if you reform, you see the way they've written up the Bible, storytelling. And the Zohar says, woe to that person who considers these stories as storytelling. So they might be interesting for whom? For a child, maybe the age of 7, 14. But certainly we're not interested in stories. So what purpose does the Bible serve for us today? Therefore, the Zohar goes into this discussion of consciousness. When Yaakov sent Malachim, he was preparing himself for war. And as we have discussed many a time, even on a physical level, where does one prepare war? You send the army in, or at headquarters, they discuss strategy. The imbecile sends the army out and hopes that they will win. The smart army man prepares all of the logistics before the war begins. So obviously, where is the war being fought? On the battlefield, or is the war being fought at headquarters? What would you say?
Headquarters.
Of course at headquarters. It's only an imbecile who sends in the troops and hopes that they win. There's got to be a strategy. If there's got to be a strategy, you're talking about what? Consciousness. He figures out the whole war where? On the desk, on the table. Is that true or not?
Yeah.
That would be a smart general. So in other words, everything that we even do in our own lifetime, it's an imbecile who goes ahead and doesn't think in advance, or the smart individual who thinks it through before. So therefore, the Zohar immediately relates this entire aspect of Yaakov and Esav, the war. Supposedly they were going to fight with each other. Is this a war, a physical war? Says the Zohar, no. Talking about here, not only of planning, as Yaakov did, to defeat Esav, as we will learn shortly. This is a war of strategy. But it is more than that. Because I don't think any one of us are preparing for war tomorrow. And therefore, I guess we can therefore just pass over this part. Of what interest does it serve? Right? If it's telling me about a war between Yaakov and Esav. And even the way the rabbis describe it, it's the eternal war between Yaakov and the non-Jew.
Mm-hmm.
And we know,
two states of consciousness.
And we know that is not true.
Two states of consciousness fighting with war with one another.
But it's easier for the Jew to say, we're battling. You see, take a look at the non-Jew, or if you're an Israeli, take a look at the Arab. Who's my enemy? The Arab. The Zohar does not believe in that. The Zohar does not believe that battles are fought at the battlefield. Real battles are fought where? With brains, at its very least. And the Zohar goes one step further and says, as you all know, no wars are fought with brains, but they are fought with consciousness. They are fought with consciousness. What does that mean? That means just like a person wants to convince another individual, he wants to sell him something, he wants to take his money, is that right? When you sell somebody, why do you want to sell them? And we're not assuming that everybody wants to sell because he wants to help the individual who's going to buy. Not everybody sells only for the reason that people are going to buy. So we will assume that most people sell things so they can take the other one's money. Isn't that right? In other words, it costs $5. If he can take $7, he's made $2. We say that's used in the way of buying and selling. But in effect, focus into what's going on. $2 is what he's trying to take away from the other individual. Look at it from that point of view. Now look at it another point of view. Why should he give away his $2? But if I can convince him why it's so good for him, then he'll say, well, why shouldn't I pay the $2? It's going to do some good for me. Now, where did that come from? That came from my mind over his mind to convince his mind that this is good for him. Is that correct? We're trying to understand things around us, as you know, from a Kabbalistic point of view, not what everybody can see at the level, because nothing happens there. Only imbeciles operate on that level. We just got through saying, if that's all you're looking at. But things have to go beyond, or before things happen, you plan things out. This battle between Yaakov and Esav is not, as most Jews would like to interpret it, as the war between the Jew and his enemy, the non-Jew. That's the way it's usually described, because who is Esav? Esav is the father of non-Jews. And so therefore, this is the battle. Comes the Zohar and says, that's not even the battle. You see, because the battle that's going on between Yaakov and Esav is the battle that each and every single individual goes through each and every single day of his life. The battles of uncertainty, the battles of not knowing what to do, the battles with his wife. It's not a battle between Jew and non-Jew, because if every Jew in particular could straighten out his own life, he straightened out the whole world. So says the Zohar. and the cause of all troubles in the world? As we all know, the conspiracy is right. You know what the Goyim say? The Jews have a conspiracy how to destroy us. Have you heard that?
Mm-hmm.
A conspiracy. And I say they're right, but maybe for another reason. There is a conspiracy. Do you know why there's a conspiracy? Because the activity of a Jew, if he's bad, then he creates all of the misery in the whole world. We don't want to go into why the Jew has this kind of peculiar and particular power. But according to the Zohar, all troubles in the world is really, and where do you place that problem? Right at the doorstep. Incidentally, for those of you who don't know, Rabbi Shimon was Jewish. You know, if you're not sure whether he was Jewish or not, but he was really Jewish. So, he says that the battle here that is being described in the Torah is not discussing battlefields, is not discussing Jew and non-Jew. It is discussing the two consciousness that come to every single individual, whether you're Jewish, whether you're not Jewish. This is the kind of battle that everyone is going to be faced with throughout his entire life. Now I can see maybe this is getting interesting. Now maybe even the Bible will tell me how I can win the war. Which war? My war. How can I deal with everybody else and win that war? If we can understand the Torah from that perspective, then we're maybe it's going to become interesting. Did you want to say something, Sylvia?
No, I'm just shaking
okay.
my head.
Just agreeing. Okay.
The two consciousness right. between the desire to share and the desire to receive.
That's right.
Unless you're reading my mind, I'm thinking this way, that these battles that go on within ourselves usually manifest out there eventually.
Now, if you want to know why there really is trouble outside, is because I said, collectively, it's the Jewish problem. But individually, you can't say it's a Jewish problem because it's made up of individuals. So if the individual is bad, then of course he therefore conducts his business, conducts his relationship with his family, either negatively or positively. So it all really boils down to not what's going on outside, but what's going on inside. This is what the Zohar means by angels. So there isn't something called angels, maybe with wings, even though we put that kind of cover on one of our books, you know, someone flying with wings. No, malachim means consciousness. Malachim means consciousness. That is what the Zohar says. Ba adam leitayer nichna hayesara lefanav. And if a person wants to become tahor, we'll soon see what that means, but in any event, literally it means if he wants to purify himself, if he just thinks that way, nichna hayetzer hara lefanav, that evil inclination, that negative cosmic thought energy, intelligence, becomes subjected. The fact that he wants to be litaher, vayamin sholet al asmol, and then the right shall rule over the left, ushnehem. Now this is the most startling declaration of the Zohar that I have ever seen. And it says, ushnehem, both the yetzahara, both the evil energy, intelligence, or consciousness, and both the yetzahatov, the positive thought consciousness, mitchabrim lishmor et ha'adam bekol drachav shehu holech. Not only does he rule, or the positive over the negative, but in essence, states Rabbi Shimon, both of these two forces join together, and now will assist the individual. Not only the positive, but also the negative, will also assist this individual, b'kol derachav shehu holeh, in every aspect that he goes. V'zeh shekatuv, and this is what it means, ki malachav yitzaveh lach lishmarcha b'chol derachecha. You shall command those angels or those consciousness or those two entities, and they shall watch you in everything that you do. And therefore, Rabbi Elazar continues. We haven't gotten to a clear explanation of that yet, but I just want to bring in this aspect of Rabbi Elazar, the son of Rabbi Shimon. Mamid et ha-mikra hazeh b'Yaakov. He says this pasuk is talking about Yaakov. Shehakadosh Baruch Hu hizmin imo malachim machnot mimunim mishum shehaya ba shalom im hashvatim elyonim shehayu kulam shleimim karui. In other words, how do you get together and have this kind of dominion ruling over these forces? He says, because you have to have shleimut. As Yaakov was b'shleimut, therefore, once an individual has achieved that kind of level of purity, if you want to call it, then there isn't anything in the world that can come towards him, or that you'll have to then, as the Jew says usually, look what he did to me. Look what they did to me. Never again, because nobody will be able to touch him, and therefore he'll never have to exclaim, look what he did to me. Because of what he did, I am suffering today. When an individual is thinking in terms of what? Of sharing. L'taher. What does tahor mean? Purity. It's the opposite of tameh. When he is tahor, meaning what? When he is in a circuit of energy, when he is in a field of circuit of energy, which means what? There is sharing, there is receiving, there's a balance between the both. Then these two consciousness will watch over him, says the Zohar, and nothing and nobody will ever be able to touch him. Nothing and nobody will ever be able to touch him. This is what is being discussed here. On the level of the surface where we live, Esav absolutely came to destroy Yaakov. It so states. He came to destroy him. But Yaakov was already, as a general would do, prepare all of his logistics before the battle. And this is what he was doing. He was contemplating. He was looking inside, not outward. He was looking within. Was he b'shleimut? Was he complete? If he was complete, then he had nothing to fear. If he was complete, if he was not complete, then what does it mean he was not complete? It means that maybe negativity within him was more pronounced. There was more activity of negativity, of rason lekabel, of desire to receive, more so than desire to share, then he'd have to worry. Then he would have to worry. But as long as he could look at himself and look in the mirror and say that as much as I have asked for myself, so have I also concentrated on sharing. These two aspects, if they exist within the individual, then what had happened here can happen with everyone in his own personal life. So states the Zohar.
So all right. Maybe he was sending three because it's a desire to share, desire to receive, and desire to
well, there's no place here that it says that he was sending three, right?
But I thought I said three.
No, did I?
Well, maybe I'm thinking of three because of Abraham.
But we did mention the third force. What is the third force? I just mentioned it. The balance. In other words, when we said, rather than think outside, towards the outside, think inside, and try to see, am I balancing both the left and the right?
Is this what it is? The inside would be his thought, and the outside would be what before was an enemy, would now be the outside, would be a vehicle now, in which you can
begin to think and project within himself.
It becomes a vehicle rather than an enemy.
That's right.
Okay.
Or an opportunity.
Oh, an opportunity, yeah.
Or an opportunity.
Yeah,
that's right.
Okay. Why then do they have to send presents to Esau? The filah, I understand. Okay.
Right.
But why did they have to send presents to Esau? When Esav represents the evil inclination of the Yetzirah.
Does everybody understand?
No.
Well, I didn't come to that part.
Oh, yeah.
But, okay, now it then says that to prepare for this battle, and the battle was not going to be when he meets Esav, as we said before. Is that when he's going to prepare his strategy? He'd done the war long before he met Esav. Now, beside tefillah, which means to, in retrospect, to look inside, he also prepared gifts for Esav. Gifts. Vayari Yaakov mor vayisalei vayachas etam, and it says then. They're telling him that he's coming here. In verse 14 of chapter 32, it says then he was going to give a gift le'esav achiv, right? To his brother Esav. Now why? I mean, if he's going to prepare all of this in advance, what was the purpose of the mincha? The Zohar has already taken care of that, but of course there are different levels in our observation. But within the verse that the Zohar quoted, Lepetach Chatat Rovetz, if you know how to live Kabbalistically, you really have no problems. In fact, all your enemies are not even enemies. And the greatest enemy is stress. Is there a greater enemy than stress? Be happy 24 hours a day. Find me the individual who can say 24 hours a day, and we're not talking about someone who's just doing nothing all day, but someone who's active all day and says, I have no stress all day. Hard to find somebody like that, right? Because part of this is also to take care of Lepetach Chatat Rovetz. And the Zohar said, why do we have to, on Shabbat, when we make the motzi, the Mekubalim would do what? They would cut the first piece of the challah, and what did they do with it? And they would not eat it. This was for the enemy. That's why they, every time on Shabbat, they would cut up the challah. The first piece goes to whom? To the Satan, or the Yetzer Hara. The Brit, who gets the first portion? The Satan. The Orla, the piece that we cut off, that's given to the, you're supposed to be Mechaven. This is the consciousness. For those who know what Brit Milah means, and you've already learned in the courses, you know what Brit Milah is really about.
What does it translate?
A circumcision.
Oh, okay.
Right.
I don't know.
Right. No. I thought you knew.
I don't know Hebrew.
But Brit Milah. Yeah.
I'm asking as I know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but
right. Right. Okay. Then, okay.
Who is it given to?
What's that?
Who is it given to?
It's taken, and that piece should be buried into the ground. In other words, it just shouldn't be discarded. While most people, you know, pay no attention to it, but
is that done today?
Where you would have a someone addressing himself with the Kabbalistic understanding of the Brit, this is what they would do. Yes.
Okay.
It's done today. How many people are doing it today? Hopefully it'll become more widespread as we go on, and people will know what they're supposed to be doing.
To purify that which was not pure?
No. No, that's not the reason. That's not the reason. The reason is because he's got to be nourished. He's not supposed to remain hungry.
I'm talking about the burying of the...
Yes. Now, why do we put it into the ground? Because, you know, the ground represents what? The epitome of a desire to receive. Where does gravitation come from? From the earth, right? What is that? That's all the kabeo. Is there a bigger desire to receive than earth? Why can't we fly? Because the earth pulls, right? There's no greater consciousness of a desire to receive than the earth. And therefore, we take this little piece of Allah and we put it into the earth after the Brit. You've got to feed him. As long as the Mashiach did not come yet, and we are subjected to the desire to receive for oneself alone, we must feed him. But why should we feed him with goodies?
Feed the earth or feed the baby?
Feed the earth or that consciousness of the Yetzihara or the evil inclination.
Earth is she, and I'm just saying him.
What's that? Earth is she. That's right. But earth is she, but her internal consciousness is male. Right? Not to be chauvinistic, but...
All external is
Okay. What about on Shabbat? Should we then not eat the end piece?
No, that's right. We leave that for him. That's right.
What do you mean, the last piece of food?
What's that?
What is the end piece?
The first piece. The first piece.
When you make the blessing on the bread.
Of the challah. That's right. The first piece is given to him. Okay?
Her.
Okay. But the Yesahara, well, because, look, I did not decide that the DNA, right, or the sperm, what creates the person? Not the egg of the female. It's the sperm, the zeta of the male. Now, I didn't decide that. Now, you show me how a woman can... All she does is carry the baby. Now, I'm not saying without carrying, but the seed is the one that by which the tree grows. Absolutely, everything. In fact, you cannot have one without the other, but we have to qualify. One has a function of one sort, and one has a function of another. They are not contradictory, complementary.
You don't want the men to get conceited again.
Well, let me see a baby born or a tree grow without the female, right?
Well, if it's somebody who thought so. The way they put us in the background.
All right. I don't know who they are, but okay.
The world.
That's not according to Rabbi Shimon.
That's why I like it. What do you think?
Oh, that's why you like it.
Me too. It's the first time I found a reasonable balance. Having grown up in a community that's been quite sexist, you know, with Jews and everything. And it's very refreshing.
Okay, all right. I'm happy.
Exactly.
Right? No, you've got the... Both are equally important. One without the other... cannot come to a conclusion, right? You must have both.
Spirit, matter, so separate.
Which is more important, the body or the soul? Well, obviously the soul. But let me see a soul do its tikkun, do its correction without the body, right? It's got to have the body. All right? In other words, that house, that malchut, as we call it. All right? Therefore, Yaakov understood that he would have to send a mincha. And that's why we say that it was Yitzchak who portrays the left column, the desire to receive. Abraham is right column, Kav Yamin, sharing. Yitzchak is Kav small, desire for oneself. And Yaakov is the Kav Amsa'i. He's the middle column, and he does the balancing. This is the rest of us. We're supposed to constantly keep these two opposite polarities in a balance. No less than the filament in a bulb must create this balance. But on every day of the week, there's a prayer called Mincha. Mincha. Why is it called mincha? The afternoon service, right? Some people even think that mincha means afternoon.
What does it mean?
Mincha is a prayer that is recited when the sun begins to its descent. And Yitzchak, Isaac, the patriarch, created this kind of prayer, and it's called mincha, afternoon. Why is it called mincha? Because we know that the sun is beginning to set, and we know that darkness is coming, because a consciousness of energy intelligence is now ruling the world. You know why the sun begins to set? Not because it's beginning to set, but because there is a force called Kaf Smol, the left column, that says, sun, you are the power, you are the light, now has come the time for you to set. That consciousness is called left column. And therefore, we can do nothing about that other than to appease it. Other than to appease it. And therefore, the prayer of Mincha is just an appeasement for this strength or this power. And therefore, as you know, between the time of Shkia is the time when most criminal acts are perpetrated between the ages of 5 and 7, because the negative energy thought intelligence makes those people who would like to steal or murder, most of it takes place between the time of the hours of 5 to 7. This is a statistic. Now, they never questioned, was there a conference or a seminar by all criminals throughout the world to decide that between the hours of 5 and 7 is the time that we should all murder and kill, right? Obviously, something like that never took place. Because this is the power that is ruling the consciousness of negativity, and therefore Yitzchak, who was this embodiment, this portrayal of desire to receive, he created the tefillah of Mincha.
Mincha l'shon menucha.
To quiet it down. That's why it comes from the word mincha. It comes from the word menucha. That is correct.
Everything you're channeling to mincha, you're thinking to give to him?
Only to quiet him down. That's right. And it was so structured for that reason. But it is the same amidah, the same shmon esrei, the same prayer at mincha as it is in the morning. So where is going to be the difference? So if you haven't learned Kabbalah, you really haven't accomplished anything.
Is it because of the morning?
Because it's the same prayer. The words are the same for the shachrit, for the morning prayer, as it is in the afternoon. So what's the difference? The answer is there is only one difference. If what your meditation is at that point is going to make the difference. Like the telephone wires for all of us is the same. Well, what's the difference between my telephone conversation and someone else's? Is it in the telephone? Or is it what is being said? What is being thought?
Yeah, but I'm thinking of, you're saying the prayer because nighttime is coming.
That's right.
In the morning, is it because nighttime is leaving?
No, in the morning, it's shachrit, the sun is coming up.
So why should
there's positive energy. Oh, because that's what I'm going to think.
But to say
because the prayer is only a combination of Olive Bet, nothing more.
Oh,
it's the vehicle.
It's just a
vehicle. In fact, at nighttime, it's the same prayer. So what's the difference? And yet it says that Abraham structured the prayer for Shachrit, Yitzchak structured the prayer for Mincha, and Yaakov structured the prayer for Arvit, for the evening. But it's all the same prayer. Why did you need the three of them to create the same prayer? The Amidah is the same that Abraham created. So what did Yitzchak and Yaakov do? They brought in another meditation to tell you that when you say this Amidah, you've got to think this way. When it's in the morning, think that way. Think Chesed. In the afternoon, think Gvura. At night, think Tiferet or Malchut, whichever.
You're talking about Sephora.
What's that?
You mentioned the Sephora.
That's right. That's where it's at. Uh-huh. Inserting like you have a casing, right? Mm-hmm. Now, what are you going to put into that casing? An atom bomb? But you're not going to use an atom bomb for a local battlefield. Then you, in this casing, you will put in something which is going to be directed to that. The casing is the same. The question is, what's going to be inside? The difference of these three prayers is the meditation. Nothing more and nothing less. So therefore, it's called mincha. All right? All right. Now, speaking of prayer, again, it says that also in this parsha, that he was left by himself, and he prayed. And he prayed. He was worried. He was worried. Vayivate Yaakov Levado, in verse 25, he was left alone, Vayavek Ish Imo Ad Alot Ashacha. And it says that Yaakov was left alone, and this is, in fact, we learn, the Zohar also mentions it so elsewhere, that one should never go by himself at night. Now, what does it mean it's night? Why is it night? Is the sun shining at night?
No. Someplace.
Someplace it's shining. The sun didn't go down, so the sun is always the same. What does it mean at night? And at night, there's negativity. Why is there negativity? Because where I am, that power of the sun does not. Anyway, it says he was left alone. He was just by himself, and therefore no one should ever walk in the street alone. There should always at least be two people. All right, and then he had a confrontation. He had a confrontation with this man. Had a confrontation. So everyone, you know, tries to understand what does it mean here. He had a confrontation with whom? So it says that he had a confrontation with the Tsar of Esav. What does the Tsar of Esav mean? It means the minister of Esav. What is Esav? Now we know. Thought, negative energy, intelligence. The evil part in us. The part that says steal. The part that says hurt. But the part that says, speak Lashon Hara.
But it wasn't somebody that Esav sent. It was a battle within himself, or was it Esav sending it?
It was really within himself. Really
Esav
within
didn't
himself.
Say, go over here and do this to Jacob. It wasn't.
It was. It was really that kind of a battle.
Because it manifested in himself first. Therefore,
because it's not Esav who was maybe 50 miles away, but it was the ministering angel. What does it mean, the angel again? It means that thought, energy, intelligence that says steal, hate, wanted to actually become part and parcel of Yaakov. That's what this whole business is about. If you read it literally, all it is saying that suddenly an angel came and there was a battle. And then he became lame. All right, we'll come to that shortly too. But in any event, what is really happening here is, again, the root of that negative thought, energy, intelligence came to do battle with Yaakov. And the Zohar asks, Shoel, Kevin Sha'ama Banu Elachicha Od Einanu Yodim Shuei Sav? The angels returned and said, we came to your brother. And it says, which brother? Your brother Esav, as if we don't know who's Esav. So the Zohar says, v'im tomer shechazah b'tshuva, maybe you think Esav was chozer b'tshuva, v'oleg b'derech mitukan. Lo ken, ela Esav harasha ki mekodem lachen. How do we relate with that? Because in our own minds, there are many times that we would like to believe things that are really not true, right? We like to rationalize things that really don't exist. If we want something desperately, we can make it and turn it into a white lily, right? It could be all wrong, but we can begin to justify and rationalize why I can do it. Unfortunately, many of us do this, not all the time, but on occasion, where we think we are right. Maybe if we're not completely right, we will find the reasons why we're completely right, if we're not too sure. What is that? What is that? That is this part of us that we're talking about. That part that is called negativity. All right? So,
could you also say it's the ego?
What's that?
The ego?
Most times I would have to say that's the bottom of it. That's right. Because what is ego? Ego sells me. What is ego? In essence, it adds up to that one word, me. Everything is for me. Why does someone want ego? Because in this way he receives. If he has an ego, and so everyone will consider him to be a great man, again, he is receiving that kind of respect, honor, or whatever. The ego, again. So he says, maybe you think that Esav HaRasha did tshuva. Well, what do you mean he did tshuva? Why would I want to think that Esav, you know, would do tshuva?
Repentance.
I always forget. I always forget. You've been really away in the Philippines a long time.
I don't understand either. Don't even talk to
me. But these are words that even Jack didn't.
Know that.
Jack was away too, but look how quickly he grasped. That's right.
That's right. That I never was.
Right. All right. Now, why would even Yaakov think that he was called Zeh B'tshuva? And here again is a tremendous lesson, especially in our time. A lot of people that I can say that I have seen many thousands that have suddenly been called Zeh B'tshuva, they have turned back to religion, quote, whatever religion means, right? Zeh B'tshuva. And the minute he's called Zeh B'tshuva, now he's doing Isn't he now a perfect individual? Like yesterday he ate ham and eggs in the morning for breakfast, right? Now he wouldn't think of eating it. Now he wears a kippah. Yesterday he didn't. Today he wears a long coat. Yesterday he didn't. Today he puts on tefillin. Yesterday he didn't. What could be more of a chozer b'tshuva than that kind of situation? He's already made it. Can you imagine how long it took? It could have even taken 10 minutes.
What a nice boy.
Wow. This is incredible. What a transformation. Do you really believe that a person could transform in 10 minutes? How many times we try to grow? We try to grow. When we've come to grips with a certain condition with our child or our brother or our sister, and for whatever reincarnation reasons, we can't get along with them, right? But we make efforts. Could you say overnight, two brothers that didn't care for each other, overnight care for each other? Each one tries to come to grips with the problems, and little by little, but over here, all of a sudden, in 10 minutes,
a miracle
happened. He's a totally religious Jew. Incidentally, it can't happen anywhere else, except when you become a totally religious Jew. There is a five-minute transformation. I don't even think these illusion magicians can do things like that. It even takes them a few minutes until they can change over something from a reality to an illusion or back. But, you know, even you see the best of him, not in 5 minutes. And here, 5 minutes, complete transformation. Wow. So maybe you think that Esav was called Zeh B'tshuva, right?
Maybe a born-again Christian can do it.
What's that?
Maybe a born-again Christian can do it also.
At least they've got to listen to an hour lecture, you know, by one of the guys. Yeah, they can do it too, by the way. It goes pretty quick by them too. Yeah. But in any event, maybe it can happen. Maybe someone does become a Zeh B'tshuva, but Ve'im tomer shechazar b'tshuva v'holeh b'derech metukat lo ken. Ela Esav HaRasha kimukodem lachen. Don't think that these things can happen overnight. They don't happen overnight. He is the same individual. The fact that on the outside, Esav, and you're going to hear Esav talk, wow, like he almost forgot everything that happened, right? That Yaakov stole the bracha, right? And he forgot, in fact, that he wanted to kill him. He said, as soon as my father dies, I will kill Yaakov. And he changed all of a sudden. So these angels or messengers came back and say, look, things don't happen like that. Yesterday he wanted to kill you. The fact that today with words or even with actions or even with the way you dress can't happen overnight. A real Chozer B'Tshuvah would be someone who has internally changed, but externally doesn't make the change. And therefore he's the same. So the Zohar asks, V'lama amru lo kol zot? Like, really, why do you have to go through all this? Aren't we talking about Yaakov now? Yaakov is one of the chariots. Why would, in essence, he have to fear Esav? He's one of the chariots. He is, in fact, the portrayal of Kavamtsi, central column. The central column. The man who can balance right and left, who can control the world. Because anyone who can create a totality of balance of right and left, at that moment, no matter what should be happening around everybody else, nothing can touch that individual, no matter what's going on. He will be totally unaffected. If that's the case, then the Zohar says, why did we need all this? You know, sending the presents and being mitpalel, you know, prayer and so on and so forth. And he answers, Mishum shehakadosh baruch hu rotze tamid b'tfilat ha-tzadikim u'mit'ateh b'tfilatam. Because Hashem wants, or the force, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he wants constantly the prayers of the righteous. And he becomes crowned. He becomes crowned. He, all the way up there, the force, right? He becomes crowned because we pray. She'otan ha-malach ha-mamuna al tefilat Yisrael sandalfon shemo. There's a very specific angel. And if you know that angel, that's going to assist you. If you don't know the angel, when you pray all day and all night, I'm not sure how much you really accomplish. But in any event, there's an angel, there is a messenger, there's a force that handles prayer. That handles prayer. If you're in business, do you handle everything if you've got a big business going? You usually have to delegate, and someone's got to handle it. And certainly if we're busy all day in our own business, and when we pray, we can pass that on to somebody else to handle it for us. His name is Sandalfon. And he makes an atara, he makes a crown for eternity. Now, what does this really mean? First of all, what significant pleasure is there for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for the Creator, that he wants the tzaddikim to pray? Why would he need it, or why does he want that? And secondly, when we pray, we crown him. Like, without our prayers, he remains a king without a crown. Because if he has the crown on, how can I crown him again with my prayers?
Is this a vehicle of him being made?
Well, he's saying that we are creating the crown on the head of HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Because we are the vehicle to make it
manifest or to make it happen in the world?
Well, something close to that. But we'll have a 10-minute break.